Well, man, it's really an honor to be with you guys. It's an honor, and it's an amazing welling up of my heart to look around the room while we're singing and while we're doing this, because I just am excited that so many folks are serious about wanting to see people live sin every day. They're serious about seeing sentness and the missional element of our lives, the purpose of our everyday to be. To go out and be a letter from God into the lives of people. And if all of us are that serious about it, then what that means is that we'll lead like that and we'll release leaders like that. And that's when movement will really happen, because something that I like to say a lot is that I don't think, because you hear a lot, especially in the church planning circles, you hear a lot of guys make statements like, man, we're going to start a movement. Right, and I don't know why, but I'm so uncomfortable with that, because I think Jesus did, right? I thought he did. I thought he actually started a movement, and we ought to join his. His is a good one, and so since it's such a good one, we ought to join his movement, and because it's going to continue to happen whether we join his or not, and so. Ours would just kind of go off and become a fiefdom instead of really being kingdom. And I don't want to do fiefdom work. Anybody else? You know, I think, and that's what excites me. I mean, I'm sitting in there and we're doing the little twub deal and getting that going, and then standing up and singing and listening and looking around, and it just excites me that you're here. One thing that's really cool is we're really big on making sure that we know this isn't just a conference where you come and you get, you know, fire hose with information. Those things are great. We're not knocking that, because I think sometimes getting overloaded with information can at least cause us to go and really process some things. What this is it isn't an expert talking to you. It's that we all are experts in this sentness stuff, in this living sent thing. And so because of that, we're going to have shared expertise here in these conversations. And so when you go out into the conversations, it isn't just that you have one guy that's an expert, but each of us has a really beautiful story that's woven together into the sentness of the kingdom of God. And so in that sense, don't be afraid to share that part of your story. And I want to give you that chance right now. If you get our e-newsletter, then we sent out about a week or two ago that for this opening session, I just wanted a few folks to come. I don't know who prepared or if anyone even read it, to be honest with you. But I asked if you would to come ready to share a story. To share a story of how someone in your context is living sent. And so I want to give you the chance to do that. If anyone's bold enough to start off, to let us know what's a story, a way that you're seeing someone live sent in the context in which you lead. Who wants to kick us off? Did I mention that this is a conversation? All right, good. There we go.
My name is Brian Kelly, and I'm a professor at Southeastern University. And I was just installed as a pastor in a replant about 2 miles from here in Highland City that has about 10 people in it. And so I'm real excited about that. But there's a man in that congregation who's a good friend of mine. His name is Dale Kimsey. And Dale and his wife have worked with the gangbangers here in Central Florida for the juvenile justice system for Gale for 20-some years and Dale for the last 13 years. And Dale was telling me his story. He serves in a lockup facility over here by Brandon with about 150 teenage guys that are all either going into the system or just coming out of it. And he was telling me about a woman there that works with him in this bureaucracy that he's really frustrated with, because it's not faith-based, it's the criminal justice system. And he can't really bring Christ in there explicitly, but as a counselor and working with these young guys, he's tried to live sent as much as he could there in that context. And a woman there who, as he says, is really harsh and always rebuking folks and this and that, came into his office last week and she said, "Dale, I don't know what it is about you, but I've watched you for years. And the way you react with people is just totally different than everybody else here." She says, I know you're a Christian or something like that, but she said, "I just want you to know that I've watched your life, and there's a difference there, and it's caused me to think about the way I react with people. And I thought that was just amazing that he had that story, that somebody came to him and told him that, because he's really living sent there in that juvenile justice facility just a few blocks from here, or a few miles from here.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Brian. Good stuff. All right, who's next? Who has another story of how you've seen, how you know someone? Mike Kaufman over here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm Mike Kaufman. I serve with Florida Baptist, the East Coast area, and I've come to know in the past year a guy named Wally and his wife Betty, and they used to live in South America, serve in South America, but these past few years they've been in the Melbourne area, and they just decided to look around and say, who's here that we can relate to? And so there's a ton of Hispanic folks that have moved into the Brevard County area, and they just started engaging these people. Wherever they saw them, they just talked to them. They struck up a conversation with them. They started gathering those people, and they began to meet at First Baptist Church of Rockledge for a little while. And then they discovered that a lot of these people that were starting to come actually lived in one specific mobile home community of about 300 homes. So they went over there. I drove over with them about a year ago, and we drove around the park, prayed through the park, and here was this destroyed community clubhouse in the mobile home park from hurricanes about 4 years ago. Never had been fixed up. Windows shattered, broken, mold inside, everything else. And Wally's, I suggested, well, what about this? Could we worship here? And Wally goes, well, that's a great idea. And that's all I said. And he took the ball. He started gathering folks from different churches in that area. One guy showed up who had construction expertise. And before you know it, last Easter, they're opening that clubhouse for worship. The owner of the park blesses it. She's excited about it. She spoke on the first Sunday there just to say, we're glad you could be here. Hispanics are coming to know the Lord through their conversations in the park. And by the way, Wally and Betty are about 75 years old, looking for the next place to go.
Wow. How about one or two more? I know we're a little bit off on time, and I want to be faithful to getting us back on track. So somebody keep me on track with that. But.
My name is Doug Oliver. About a year and a half ago, I got invited to come up to Davenport, Florida to help replant a church. And my daughter, Rachel, who at the time was getting ready to start her senior year in high school, I knew that was going to affect her the most of all my children. She was a theater major at the School of the Arts in West Palm Beach, Florida, and she was getting ready to go into her senior year and, you know, with the senior show and be part of the big senior musical. And so I went to my daughter and I said, honey, you know, I feel God has called us to do this. If you want to stay here, we'll find some way for you to stay down here. And she spent about 2 days praying about it. She says, no, I think that, you know, I know what God wants me to do with my life, and I think this is the first step in it. So she came up with us and started into a new high school as a senior, a brand new school. She was instrumental in starting a Christian outreach club there at the school, which is going again this year, even though she's away at college. She spent the summer as an intern at a church in Texas as the children's minister out there. And now she's up at Taylor University in Indiana. And just a few days ago, she called me, Dad, you're not going to believe this. And she described to me something that had happened at their spiritual renewal week and how, like, 200 or 300 kids had spent 5 or 6 hours after the speaker of getting together and praying and repenting and confessing their sins. And, you know, she talked to me about some of the people that she got to pray with and pray for. And she said, Dad, you know, this is happening in my third week of college. Just think what God is doing to prepare us to go out into the world and be an impact for Jesus and for his kingdom. And that's my girl. That's my daughter. And I'm really, really proud of her.
It's awesome. All right, just one more.
All right.
Hey guys, excited to journey with you over the next couple days. My name is Rob. I'm in New Orleans, and we just started a new church there. One of our family members just began to just live sin at work at Home Depot, working night shifts, and just began to live out his faith at work there, and ended up being a part of seeing this kid named Josh come to Christ. And God completely rocked Josh's world. And the coolest things happened over the last 4 or 5 months. Basically, Josh has started a couple Bible studies in between shifts at work. He has started to share the gospel within his home. He's basically overseeing about 2 or 3 different Bible studies within his community. And we're beginning to meet just one-on-one, just kind of walking through things together. But it's so cool to see how the gospel was presented to him in a way that was lived sent, and he's taken that now and he's carrying that to other people as well, and other people are coming to know Christ. So really just cool to see that evolve.
That's awesome. Yeah, because you reap what you sow, right? Yeah. And that's what was sown in his heart is this isn't about gathering, it's about being sent. And she was sent to him, or that worker was sent to him. Yeah, you know, it's amazing. I mean, I know we all have spheres of influence. We all have families. We all have neighbors. We all have elements of things that we do in the marketplace. We all have a local and global community, a world. We all have, probably most of us, most of us probably have a presence on the web or a way that we interact with people online. And those are the spheres of our living. They're the spheres of our life. And how irresponsible it would be of the church to not exist where we live. Because I can't find in the scriptures where the gospel, the good news, the nearness of Jesus, right? The nearness of God. That's really the good news, isn't it? That God decided to come near. And that the nearness of God, I can't find in the gospel where the nearness of God is demonstrated apart from life. And so our daily lives, they matter. And so just to kick us off, I just wanted to read you two quick scriptures and just leave you with a thought. In John 20:21, Jesus is here sharing some things after his resurrection. And it says, "The disciples, seeing the Master with their own eyes, were exuberant. Jesus repeated his greeting, 'Peace to you. Just as the Father sent me, I send you.'" Right? And the sentness of Jesus' teachings, it's found throughout the Scriptures. It's found throughout His teachings. Right? It's found throughout those four books called the Gospels. It's found in those who exposed His teachings, Paul and others who began to write expositionally about the things of Jesus. And what's so cool is Paul in 2 Corinthians, basically in chapter 3, he's kind of defending his credibility. And he makes this statement. He says, "Look, I don't need letters of recommendation. You guys are my letter. Your very lives are my letter. In fact, your lives are a letter. You are a letter. Because God decided not to pen or to put His message on stone tablets, but on human hearts." And so how is your life a letter? But maybe for this particular event, a better question would be, how are you inspiring those that are letters to actually live out as though they are? How are you validating the letters of the people that you lead? How are you encouraging? How are you emphasizing how important those letters really are? Because listen to what Jesus said. Is this not a passage that boggles your mind? Okay, it's like the day before He dies, so He's been teaching them for a while, right? He's been teaching them for a while. And in chapter 14 of John, verse 9, He said, "You've been with me all this time, Philip, and you still don't understand?" Right? In the Greek, what He's saying is, are you that stupid? That's a joke. So to see me is to see the Father. So how can you ask, where is the Father? Don't you believe that I'm in the Father and the Father is in me? The words that I speak to you aren't mere words. I don't just make them up on my own. The Father who resides in me crafts each word into a divine act. Believe me. I am in my Father and my Father is in me. If you can't believe that, believe what you see. These works. Right? How I've lived. Believe what you see. The person who trusts me will not only do what I'm doing, but even greater things. Because I, on my way to the Father, am giving you the same work to do that I've been doing. You can count on it. From now on, whatever you request all along the lines of who I am and what I'm doing, I'll do it. That's how the Father will be seen for who He is in the Son. I mean it. Whatever you request in this way, I'll do. What he's saying is, if you will get serious about continuing to be sent as I have been sent, about living as I have lived, about being a letter, a story of God's nearness into the lives of our culture, if you'll continue to be serious about that and seek me in that and pray to me about that, in my name, about that, I'll grant it, I'll do it, I mean it. But here's the question. Many of us in this room are leaders in church families. And I just wonder if we really lead like Jesus did. Would we look out? Let me put it this way. The people who listen to you teach, or who follow your shepherding, or who look to you for leadership that are a part of your church family, If you made the statement that you believe that the story of their everyday life is more worth podcasting than the message you taught on Sunday morning, if you made that statement, would they believe you? Because I'm telling you, Jesus led like that. He looked them in the eye and said, "You will do greater things." When is the last time that you looked someone in the eye that you disciple, that you pour into, and they actually felt validated that their everyday life was more important and you thought was greater than the dreams you were creating and the strategies you were creating and the things that you were doing? When did you think that their every day was more important than your Sunday morning? We will not see the evidence of the kingdom blossoming as the movement that Jesus started, if this stays pastor central, pastor centric, revolving around the teachings of one guy on Sunday morning. But when we emphasize the real story of the nearness of God in the everyday life of people who follow Jesus, then we will see greater things. And my prayer is that you will lead that way. My prayer is that your paradigm of... And let me put it this way in closing. Philosophically, most of you agree with what I just said. But there's an issue, right? Because philosophy hangs out over here, and pragmatism hangs out over here. And for most leaders, the bridge from philosophy to pragmatism has not been built. And when you get in a bind, you always go back to default. And the default for so many leaders in church culture is, it's about me. It's about my strategy. It's about my vision. It's about my dreams. I'll do greater. But the real story that will really spark transformation in our communities and in our specific contexts has to do when the people of our church families actually begin to believe that the story of their everyday life is worth podcasting more than my teachings. And so I challenge you in these 2 days. Do you know when real transformation happens? It blossoms out of relational dialogue. It does, and maybe you've never thought about that. But real transformation typically blossoms out of relational dialogue. Have you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? What happened there? Jesus said, "Follow me," right? And then they hung out in relationship, and he taught them, and they dialogued, and they asked questions, and they learned. And in the midst of that relational dialogue, either you have already been in that relational dialogue with regard to sentness and the validation of the everyday life of people who follow Jesus, or you haven't. And if you haven't, then may these 2 days be the first planks in the bridge between philosophy to pragmatism. Because most of you would agree that the church is a who and not a what. And if that's the case, then treat it as such. Lead as such. Strategize in that way. Emphasize in that way. Communicate in that way. And plan your schedule around releasing people, not around managing stuff. And when you do, you'll see that bridge built, and we'll see these things we say we believe about the church actually lived out the other 6.5 days of the week. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for your love, and thank you for all the things that you've done. Thank you that you let us be in on this harvest work.